Welcome, Speakeasy fans, and thank you for joining us on our new interviewing series called Whiskey Made Me Say It, where we sit down with the most influential, interesting, and funny whiskey golfers on earth. Enjoy.
Cool. All right. Welcome, Speakeasy fans. This is Brian Bailey here bringing you a new segment. Mark Sweeney and myself are going to start interviewing interesting people all around the world, and some not interesting, hence we have John Pond with us today. The segment's called Whiskey Made Me Say It. So we're going to sample different whiskeys, and we're going to talk life, golf, whatnot. And think of John, this is kind of like a dating app. So if the fans like John, we'll bring John back. We got some really cool stuff we're going to start doing with golf and whiskey. And John's going to be a part of that because he's in the Charlottesville area. But if you hate him, send me and let me know, and then I can replace him.
Please.
Please, please. So, John Pond, you have 26 seconds. Tell me something about you.
What a starting prompt. I went to the University of Virginia, still live in Charlottesville, still work in the area, was a student athlete at UVA, and am married to a professional golfer, hence the golf piece of all this.
It's a tie-in. And I actually take full credit for them getting married, because if I didn't recruit Lauren Coughlin, she wouldn't have come to Virginia. They wouldn't have met. So technically, I'm there, good or bad.
And if UVA wasn't such a dumpster fire of a football program, they wouldn't have recruited me either.
Fair enough. It all came perfectly together. But the gods were talking. So what we're going to do, John brought a little tasting for him, and he got a pick out of my allotment what we're going to try today. So we're just going to do little samples and taste and talk, learn a little bit more about John and his life. And again, a former athlete, football player, and has actually loves golf more than I do, I think. He talks golf, lives golf much more than me. He knows all the equipment. He knows all the new stuff. And he starts dropping stuff at me, and I'm just like, I don't know.
Still got the same irons from 20 years ago.
I still have the same. I have a wood that is, older than my son, I think, my driver. So first thing we're going to do is the J.H. Bards guys, they've been really good to us. And they're in local guys out in Virginia. And I forgot to bring me some water, but I'll get some in a minute. So we'll just do a little sampling. John's a rye guy, what I've learned. Mm-hmm. So this is a Virginia rye, kind of. Toasted. We've done this on past shows, so I love it. He's a high proof guy. Be honest.
So what Virginia tends to do well, and what a lot of these young distilleries tend to do well, is their rye.
Mm-hmm.
It just, for whatever reason, the aging process tends to move a little bit quicker. So you get a 2, a 4, a 6 year rye, you're looking at a 4, an 8, a 12 year old bourbon. Kind of similar in taste, and a lot of the distilleries are kind of piggybacking off of this idea to get product on the shelf quicker when they open, especially in Virginia. I mean, we're a state controlled alcohol. So the taxes that they levy on these companies, these distilleries are absolutely insane. I remember talking to somebody one time at one of these distilleries. They were selling a $60 bottle. They said their check for that's like $24.
Yeah, it's about anywhere from 50 to 60% depending on the state.
So they're getting killed, and you've seen it a lot. I mean, Silverback Distillery out in Nellisford's done the same thing with kind of their Lucky 13 and their Honey Rye. So you'll see a ton of these distilleries go young rye quickly to get it on the shelf and to have a decent taste profile for folks to kind of get into. And then you'll see a ton of bourbons with bullshit added in.
Yeah.
Honey, any type of finish they can get on it to kind of mask the youngness, the thinness of the bourbon. This one right here kind of falls in line with a lot of what I've had around the Virginia distilleries. It's a good rye. It's solid. It's going to be MGP, so they're getting it from Indiana, or I think it's Indiana where MGP is.
Yeah.
They're getting it. They're bringing it here. They're kind of aging the product as well. And putting out a solid product. I mean, if I was Virginia Distilleries, if I'm looking around, if I'm driving through the Blue Ridge and I pull up on a distillery, the first thing I'm kind of going to try is that rye product. Very similar here. You're going to get a good bang for your buck. This one's a 6 year rye, which is older than most of the Virginia distilleries I'm seeing putting out right now. But it's good. It's got a good flavor profile. It's kind of what you'd expect out of something at this age, though. You're going to get a little bit of thinness. You're going to get a lighter color. It's not really working with the wood, not having the time to kind of go through the whole process. I haven't looked at the bottle here. I guess this is somewhere sub 100 proof.
Yeah, I think it's right about 95.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's another thing you're going to get with young and new startup distilleries. Yep. They're not going to be putting a lot of stuff in the bottle when it comes out of the barrel of.
No, because water...
Water is money.
Makes it go further.
Water is money. So, you know, they've proofed it down. I'd be very interested to go by this place and kind of, you know, grab a thief and take some out of the barrel and see what it tastes like. Because they're, you know, all these places are kind of damaging their product for the most part. Sometimes water and bourbon rye can be good, yep, take out some harshness. But in this case, you know, it's got all the makings and the age statement of something that could be really solid. But just kind of adding the water in there brings it down a notch for me. I didn't really feel anything past the initial tongue.
Yeah, I agree. The initial tongue, I get kind of that Christmas morning, mm-hmm, the rye, the bite. But it definitely finishes pretty quick. Doesn't hang around very long. But again, for me, like I said, trying to find good Virginia bourbons and whiskeys they're young. Unless you like sweet, you can go to Laird's and you can get the brandies and all. They're, you know, they're a little more established and they have some longer ages. But again, I just wanted to throw this out at him just to be cruel. And, challenge him on it and see what his bona fides were.
My expert opinion.
Yes, your expert opinion. And the beauty is that it's whiskey. Someone might watch this and go, you guys are both idiots, which is probably true.
I am an idiot.
I'm a full-fledged.
I'm not going to hide from that.
No, someone asked me, why did you start a whiskey podcast? Who the hell do you think you are? I go, well, I'm just dumb enough to do it. Like, do I know it all? Not even close, but I'm dumb enough to at least do it.
You got Cameron, you got whiskey.
That gives me 2/3 of the pie.
And I think y'all get internet out here.
Yeah, we get fast internet now, finally. Our internet was so bad here. When I own a data science company that's online. I used to have to go to the local elementary school and I'd be sitting out there and the police came up, rolled up on me one night because I'm sitting in the parking lot of the elementary school uploading files and the police officer pulls up and was very nice, very, very kind lady. And she was like, what are you doing? I was like, you know, I'm just uploading files. And I'm like, oh God, in a minivan, I probably look like a perv. And then so she runs my plate, she runs my ID and she comes back and she looks at me completely serious and goes, you must have CenturyLink. And I was like, yes, we do. And she goes, it's awful. And I was, yep, like, my upload speed, literally, if I uploaded a video, I would start it at 8 a.m. And hopefully by 8 a.m. the next day, it might have uploaded. Now our electric company runs and I get a gig speed out here. So now when I upload a video, it takes a minute.
No free ads for them, but feel free to bash on CenturyLink.
Oh, CenturyLink, shit. The worst customer experience I think on the planet, dealing with people that didn't speak English when, yep, you had issues, and they kept telling me I was wrong, and I'm like, literally, I'm supposed to have uploads at least 10 megs, yep, and I'm running speed tests, and it's like 0.1. They're like, no.
That kind of sounds like any technology company customer service, though. It's never their fault.
Oh, no. It was always... And then one time it was our router, our actual modem was bad. I was like, I think our modem's bad. She's like, no, we're pinging it. It's fine. And literally we're getting like no internet service. And then finally the technician took 14 days for the technician to come out. And he goes, oh, your modem's bad.
Thanks.
And he didn't have one in the truck. Anyways.
2 weeks CenturyLink, later, he came back.
CenturyLink, I am not a customer. All right. So do you want to start with one of yours or do you want to start with one of ours?
Your show, you tell me.
Well, let's start. I haven't had this yet. So I actually stumbled on this the other day. I'll let you pour your own because I don't want to be mean and pour too much or too little. I actually stumbled on this on allotment day. I happened to just roll in, and they had this sitting here, and I was like, I've been looking for this, so thank you.
So the Heaven Hill Bottle and Bond, this is kind of a re-release. This is 7 years now. They used to have, I believe it was like a green and white label that kind of the cult bourbon following got onto and went absolutely nuts over it. I believe it was only 6 years prior to this, But, you know, it was like a $17-$25 product, somewhere in that range. Yeah. And now they've, you know,
now added, it's a $40 product.
Yeah, they've added 1 year of age onto it. Now it's like $40 and people go crazy for it. I mean, I was in North Carolina, South Carolina playing golf a couple months ago and stumbled into a North Carolina ABC store to like grab a tequila for the night or something. And they had just put this out on the shelf like 10 minutes ago, and a guy literally ran past me and almost knocked me over to grab this. Wow. And I just looked at him and I go, it ain't that good.
How big was he?
He was a little guy.
Okay, and he was going to knock you over?
He kind of tried to do the little side shuffle, and I think he thought he had clearance and didn't quite realize I made a little turn and got a piece of
it. You were a little wider than he thought. The aisle and you almost matched as you turned.
Yeah, it was a one-lane road in there. He thought it was two.
I like the smell.
Yeah, this one's, it's going to be good. It's just, the problem with this product is it doesn't live up to what the last one did.
Yeah.
It's kind of almost the remake of a movie. The sequel's never as good. you know, they added a year, they added a much fancier bottle. I think the previous one had a screw top on it, maybe. And it's good. For your price point, it's a good product. But, you know, if this was the product and that first one had never existed, you would think it's a perfectly solid, keep it on my shelf, not worried about cracking the foil and losing out on a ton of secondary value type bourbon.
Oh, I'm not that guy. Screw it. Open them.
Still lacks a little bit of the back end on it.
I would agree.
It's super sweet up front.
Really sweet up front.
Mm-hmm.
It's got a little bite in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
And then it does fade pretty quick.
Yeah, it almost tastes like one of those Werther's caramels that your grandparents used to always have in the candy jar.
With a little bit of alcohol in them.
With a little bit of alcohol in it. Yeah.
With a little bit of alcohol in it.
Exactly right.
Werther's. If you market that, 1%, that's all I want. Werther's with alcohol. Werther's bourbon.
I don't know how much money they're making. I mean, I think my grandparents had the same Werther's for 20 years and they never went stale.
I hate to say it, I like Werther's.
They're great.
You pop one open, they're consistent, but it does have a lot of that.
Well, now all the TikTok people that are doing the cooking stuff have gotten into melting those down to make their caramel sauce.
So. Nice, didn't know that.
Shout out to them for rebranding it.
That's called good marketing. That's what that's called. Look, you can melt this down to make a caramel sauce. I like this one, though.
Oh, it's absolutely solid. I mean, this is a higher quality than something I would use as a mixer, but it's one I'm comfortable sharing with friends. I don't know why the hell it's allocated in the state of Virginia, just like a lot of things they put on the shelf. It's one of those things that's starting to lose its luster a little bit. It's starting to show up on more and more shelves across the country. You're starting to see it sit a little bit longer. People have kind of gotten their stash. It's not one that someone's going to hoard 6, 8, 10, 12 bottles of like a lot of these products have gotten out of hand.
And doesn't Heaven Hill also do Elijah Craig? And
they do Elijah Craig, Old Fitz. I mean, they have a serious, serious portfolio of products.
I got to say, though, for a $40 bottle, I'm okay with this. I could sit down and enjoy this one evening.
If you're in a state where it's privatized and you walk in, see it sitting on the shelf for $70 or $80, leave it. That's what a lot of places are doing right now.
Yeah.
There a lot of places that aren't state-controlled who are not kind of obligated to their residents, their taxpayers, to sell at the manufactured suggested retail are going to piggyback, especially on a lot of these, and they're only going to put a $10 or $20 markup on it, but they're going to get those people who have seen it online, seen it on their Facebook group, seen it at their friend's house. It's a good $40 bottle.
I like it. I like I said, I have no problem with pulling that out with a couple friends coming over.
For sure.
That was good.
Where you run into the problem is when you start realizing that, like, a Van Winkle Lot B is $79.99 or $99.99, old rip $79.99.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, we're starting to cut the margins out. And if you go anywhere in Virginia, it's going to be a $65 bottle of 2-year-old whiskey.
Yep.
That you could use to clean something with.
Well, I guess we are kind of in the golden age right now of whiskeys again. So whiskeys kind of went out of fashion through the 60s and 70s and 80s, and it started to come back. And a lot of it was marketing again. They changed what they did and how they presented it. And they started doing more barrel stuff, more cask stuff, exotic finishes, and kind of recreated the market. And I think the beauty of whiskey is you can learn about the distillery, you can learn where it came from, you can learn and appreciate what it is more so than just going to grab a Miller Lite off the shelf or a You know, yeah. I think the customer really likes the story. And my whole theme and everything I've done now is I think we're going away from easy technology, malls, all that stuff is going back more to the artisan, more to what is it, where did it come from. So I think we as a population are going that way. So I think whiskey's kind of in the honey hole right now of kind of being on the front end of that on the alcohol side.
Yeah, I mean, it's really cool. I was very fortunate, kind of. COVID, for whatever reason, was great to me in terms of whiskey and my relationship with whiskey.
Everybody.
And not because I was drinking a ton of it, right? I was drinking maybe even less.
Yeah.
But people weren't willing to travel. These distilleries weren't crowded. I was part of a really great, kind of small boutique bourbon club that opened up a chapter in Charlottesville 2 months before the pandemic hit.
Good time.
And, you know, we had our barrel picks for that club lined up for the entire year. And not only did we get those barrel picks, we got them upgraded because people were declining the trips and things like that. Got to go to Louisville for 3 days with that group. We did a pick, which Brian's going to get a taste of here in a little bit, from 1792. And we went around to a ton of places and did the tours. You know, we were full mask and they were taking your temperature. There's a funny story on that.
I'm clear about it.
But we went around and saw it. And, you know, technology has definitely entered the bourbon game, the whiskey game. I mean, you go into these distilleries and there's computers running everything, and these mash tanks are massive. But at the end of the day, when you finish the tour, they walk you through a rick house, which is nothing more than sticks in a roof, and nature kind of takes over.
And hoping to God an open flame doesn't happen.
Exactly. And, you know, you've seen that with some of these distilleries, like the pre-fire and stuff at, like, I think it was Heaven Hill, had a massive fire that wiped out a ton of their stash. But as much technology is kind of going into the beginning phases of these whiskeys, when they get put in the barrel, all they do is sit. And it's a couple of humans and a forklift and a contraption rolling around, moving these barrels around and going totally off feel. So, you know, it's kind of crazy when you think about single barrels have become very, very, very popular right now. Especially ones that groups, bourbon clubs, restaurants, stores are going out and picking. You think that one specific barrel has just moved all throughout that rick house and probably others on the property.
Yep.
And the kind of lifespan of that, I think people get super into that when you're starting to talk about 8, 10, 12-year whiskeys. I mean, think of where I was 12 years ago. Yeah. And the bourbon I'm drinking most nights was sitting in a barrel somewhere.
That's true. And again, if you tie this into golf, it's the same thing. The technology side of golf is through the roof, right? Between equipment, boxes that monitor everything you do in swing, to 3Ds, what the body does. Mm-hmm. But when you go and compete, it comes back to, again, you, the human, just adapting to what's happening and go play. And whiskey's the same way. As soon as it comes out of the distillation process and they put it in a barrel, it's the human tasting it, moving it, understanding this floor on this rack is going to give me this flavor, opposed to, so again, it's that human quality I love in golf and I do love in whiskey. Mm-hmm. And that's how I kind of brought the show together. They're very similar. And the history path of whiskey and golf is very similar, rises and falls, and they actually kind of mirror each other a lot. So, you know, again, I think the beauty of all this, again, this is, when I think of whiskey, when I think of golf, it's sitting down with friends. It's just pouring a drink, playing golf for 4 to 6 hours, hopefully not six, but some golf courses I've been out there at least 6 hours.
At least.
But you're out there with friends and you're having fun. And you can even commingle while you're playing. But the concept of is, again, just stripping things back and what's important. You know, not arguing over this guy is more corrupt than that guy and the politics, or this football team is better than that football team, which are all true. But, you know, it's good to have that ability to walk away, sit down with the friends, and just talk about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I think, like I said, whiskey and all that is a great way to do that. And again, I don't drink a lot. Same thing with COVID. Like, I didn't really drink whiskey until COVID. I was more of a beer guy. So COVID did make ABC.
Yeah.
You know, they were employees that had to be at work. Which I love, right? Give them cake. So they were, you know, the superstars, the heroes out there working every day inside the liquor store. And John and them put us on to Bird Dog. So we started drinking like a flavored whiskey. And then we found Jameson Orange, which was another flavored whiskey. It's like having a cocktail without having to mix it. Yeah. And then from that, we started to leech into, well, let's, you know, I started going to Ireland. So I started drinking some Irish whiskeys, which are friendly. And then bourbons for me, I would say I'm probably a year and a half into bourbons. Mm-hmm. So I'm still pretty new, but it's a fun journey because I don't drink much. The only time I drink is usually when we're filming. Honestly, if you ask my wife, I drink less than she does, which she doesn't drink a lot, but I drink less. But I get excited when I'm going to taste something new because I don't know what it's going to be. It's got different flavors, different pieces. So that part I really enjoy.
Yeah, there's a couple interesting things on that. And speaking of the Berg Dog, I don't want people to completely discredit me when you said that. What I told Brian was, I got on to Berg Dog Peach in college, right? We were, that was splurging for us. But if you couldn't tell by the fact you can't even see the chair behind me that I'm sitting on, I was an offensive lineman. I lived with guys that were bigger and stronger than me. And we would burn up a Chick-fil-A drive-thru. I mean, absolutely spend every penny of a scholarship check on Chick-fil-A.
Per diem, and, Chick-fil-A!
You know, when you're running a budget and you're trying to figure out how the hell to spend your money, and you realize that a gallon of sweet tea is a lot less than buying four larges with ice in them.
That's called college experience right there.
You get a lot left over in your refrigerator, and, you know, one night we were planning on going out and having a good time, and we couldn't find a mixer for the life of us. And so I threw some Berg Dog Peach and Chick-fil-A sweet tea, and I mean, you know, it's a very sweet flavored drink, but if you're looking to have a good time, sweet tea goes down pretty easy.
No, I agree.
Especially when it's 95 degrees out. So that's why I put Brian on that. But the funny story about COVID and when we went to the distilleries, my bourbon group, we did a pick at 1792, and we selected a barrel of their Full Proof. Really cool experience, awesome experience. We can talk about that later if you want when we get to that bourbon. But it was like 3 months into COVID. And so we pull up and they've got the thermometers right at the gate checking your temperature.
Love it.
I run hot. You know, I like sleep with air conditioner in the hotel room on 55 if I can get it down that low. And so we were driving from place to place and I had the AC on low and I had them pointing directly at my forehead. And the lady shoots me with a little radar gun and just goes, "Sir, are you okay?" I was like, "Oh shit, I've got a fever, I've got COVID, I'm gonna die, whatever." And she looks at me and goes, "It registered 95.2.
I brought it down. I said, "I'm always an hypothermia."
It was just where it hit the skin from that air conditioner blasting on me. I said, "Can you give me a few seconds?" I cut the AC off and I said, "I had the AC blast." And she goes, "Not a problem." She hits it again. It got back to close to normal temperature, but she literally asked me if I was okay. I'm like, I will be a lot better once I get in that rick house. Start thieving some bourbon out of your barrels.
And when you went in the rick house, did they make you wear a mask or did they?
They did not in there, no, because it was technically open air.
Okay. Cool.
When we went through the tour and everything, we had to wear a mask, which, you know, is very interesting when you're doing bourbon tastings throughout the whole process.
Yeah, take your mask off, case it, and put it back on.
Yeah, it kind of stayed down for most of the point. But
it's like all the restaurants.
Yeah.
COVID doesn't go above like 4 feet. So as you're sitting down at a table, you take your mask off, COVID just flies over you. Yep. But yeah, no, it's our... Yeah.
It was interesting, though. They had, you know, whiskey glasses out like this, the Glen glasses, and we had an option between five different barrels, I believe. And so they had five on the table, and as soon as we finished taking a sip of one, they kind of picked it up and threw it away. They didn't wash it. They didn't do it. They just straightened the trash can.
Interesting.
And then I go in the gift shop and see them selling for $12.99 a piece. I'm like, well, which dumpster y'all put that in?
So now you're seeing what their markup was on the carrying glasses. Yeah. That's funny. No, I think... That's interesting. I think, like I said, I think COVID kind of reset the world a lot of different ways. And to be fair, Bird Dog was more of a, it was summertime. And my wife actually had it at a bar too. It was mixed with lemonade, but she had the blackberry with lemonade and something else. Mm-hmm. And then you talked about the peach right behind it. So yes, don't take away his street cred. Flavored bourbons or whiskeys are not whiskey, I'm sorry, not bourbons, but flavored whiskeys are not bad, like, no. For what they are. Yeah. If it's a hot 95 degree day, a flavored whiskey on ice is, it's good.
There's no difference between that and throwing a slice of fruit in your drink. Yeah. I mean, it's all the same.
No, it's all good. So, all right, let's jump in here and try one of John Pond's highly select methylate bottles.
So we've got...
I don't know, methylate might have just...
When you start
iodine getting, bottles.
When you start getting into the Facebook groups where you're swapping samples and stuff, you'll be ordering these off Amazon very soon. So this one I don't have a ton of. I cleaned the bottle out. I got this last year.
I don't
on
even
a bachelor,
want to be tainted.
Bachelor.
I don't even want to be tainted.
I wouldn't want to mix this with your selection.
Oh.
But we went out for Buddy's bachelor party, and I popped in the liquor barn. If you're ever out in Louisville, pop in a liquor barn. Most of them, they're not going to have the stuff that everyone's going nuts for, usually, unless you hit it on the perfect day right when they open. But in the back at this one, they had really cool, they have like a bar set up, and they have about 20 different allocated whiskeys back there. And I started talking to the bartender. We stayed there for like 3 hours and drank. It turned into our bar at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. But I started talking to the bartender, and what they do is they kind of pull an allocated bottle or two from each one of their shipments. And they put it out at the bar. They put out a super reasonable price. And their idea behind it was, you know, we know a lot of folks aren't going to have access to these bottles or get to try these. And we want to offer it a fair price. I had an ounce of William LaRue Weller for $12.
Wow.
I mean, if you're looking at like a restaurant or a full-blown secondary price, that's a $60 pour, $50 pour.
Yeah.
So they're trying to get it in your hands. And they had this one out here, which I have right now, which is New Lou. They're out just out in Louisville, technically New Lou, whatever. But they're doing some really cool stuff. They're a lot of MGP, but they have a master distiller who's super into trying any and everything to find the best whiskey. I mean, I was out there with a buddy who is much deeper in the game than I am. He owns a speakeasy out in Roanoke. And he's buddies with this guy and made some trades with him. He picked up 26 different experimental bourbons that never made it to market.
Nice.
And they're trying any and everything.
Yeah.
And within that, they're putting out a lot of good stuff. Their prices are high. Their bottles are going to run $79 to $119 or so. But they're open to trying anything. And so this was a 6-year MGP pick that they did. Liquor Barn went and bought the whole barrel, bottled it up, sent it out to their stores. It's going to come in right around 120 proof, so it's going to hit you pretty good.
Nice.
But it's just, for the age of it and what it is, I think it has an immense amount of flavor, and flavors you're not expecting out of a 6-year bourbon. So we'll give it a shot. Like I said, this is like the last ounce and a half, so we're going to make some small pours here, but curious to see what you think.
At 120, I'm okay with small pours.
Well, we're in your house, so you're getting the bigger pour of the two.
I have to function tonight because my wife's going to come home from work and expect me to do stuff. And I'm like, literally, I'm working right now.
Of course. When I was packaging these up to come over here, I saw that the bottle was light. It only filled up about 2/3 of my 2-ounce sampler bottle. I poured it and said, well, I'll just let Brian have this one. I didn't know we were sharing samples.
Nah,
so you've got less than an ounce of this.
That's fine.
Whatever you can get out of that for the folks, I'm curious to hear your thoughts on it. Because this is a bottle I don't really drink at home. I'm very much a social drinker. If I go out to a bar, go out to dinner, I'll have a drink. But when I'm just sitting at home by myself, I don't reach for a bottle. And this one has been in my house less than a year, which for me is moving through a bottle incredibly fast.
I like the smell. Sweet. Getting some rye pepper.
Mm-hmm.
Sits there. Sits on the tongue for a little bit. Dry finish.
Yeah. Very, very dry.
I go sweet to pepper.
Mm-hmm.
For the poor man, this is a fancy bullet. That's going to drive you nuts. I know that. That's why I said it. I understand. I know his pain points. But I really like this. To me, it definitely got a higher rye content. I'm getting the sweet from corn, but I'm definitely getting that rye bite.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a little dry finish.
Very.
Hangs out though. It's mm-hmm. still, it's
still
left,
there.
But it's still there. Yeah. So it's sitting on my tongue. So mm-hmm. definitely a long finish.
Yeah. For me at this proof, you know, you're getting that Kentucky hug. You're getting something mm-hmm. that kind of sits there and warms you up. It almost, when I first had this one, I said it to the guy at the liquor bar, and he kind of agreed with me and said it was the first time he ever heard it. To me, it's almost like kind of having something sweet, whatever you're having, and then just taking a bite of really heavily peppered beef jerky. You know, it's just got that spice. It's got that tingle in there.
And for 120, I mean, you don't get the dry punch. It's not a punchy 120. It's smooth. So this
it doesn't feel like you're going to blow it out and light a
flame
coming out.
You shouldn't drink hot water. Like, this
bottle got me in trouble. I took it to a buddy's wedding.
Oh, no.
and him and his father-in-law were big bourbon guys. We went on this trip together.
He wasn't the one getting married.
He was the one getting married, and he had bought a bottle of it the same time as me. We were the two that went to this liquor barn, and he looks at me and goes, dude, do you happen to have that new Lou that we bought in Louisville? And I said, I do. I actually just opened it recently. And he goes, I finished my bottle in 2 weeks. And I said, okay, I'll bring it. We'll put it behind the bar. And me and him were the two that knew the password for it to get the bartender to pour it. I'm not really sure how much he remembers of leaving his wedding.
Is he still married?
He is.
Oh, he is. Good. You didn't ruin a marriage.
I didn't yet. But this, this was less than a year ago, so I mean, it's still in probation period. They can pull the contract at any time.
Right.
But I mean, it's one of those ones that, you know, I think the bottle was $79 or $89.99.
Yeah.
It's up there, but you're going to get a ton of value out of this. And it's something new lose everywhere. They let a ton of people come in and do picks because they're buying from MGP. They almost have no limit on how much they can get.
Yeah. I like this one. This one's... Definitely the rye. I like rye. I didn't think I was going to be a rye guy because Irish whiskeys was my portal in.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of smooth, kind of laid back. And then I started trying bourbons, and I was like, they're too sweet. Mm-hmm. A lot of them were just too sweet for me.
Sure.
And then I stumbled on a rye, a high rye, and I was like, ooh, this is different.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to say, it's funny. I like Irish whiskey, but I love ryes. Bourbons, like I said, I'm still learning.
Yeah.
But... That was very good. Thank you.
You're
Thank you. Tip of the cap for you on that one.
I reach into my collection. I don't know if Brian's mentioned this before at all, but I've especially during COVID, I have a job where I can kind of work remotely. And the way our ABC system used to work is they would just post inventory morning of and at 10 a.m. when they opened.
Yeah, you know,
it was an absolute free-for-all. I had a laptop and a camping chair. So, you know, I'd wake up 6 a.m., check the inventory list, and I didn't care if the store was an hour away, if it was 10 minutes away. And so I was getting, you know, 5, 6, 7 allocated bottles a week.
Yeah.
And I've amassed a collection that's pretty big.
That's awesome.
So I've kind of, you know, when I was thinking about coming over tonight, intro to the program, I wanted to pull samples that were good enough to pique his interest.
But to bring them back. I get it.
I have saved the ones that aren't due for a re-invite. Those are still sitting there. I have a couple that sit in my gun safe. I value them so much.
I hate to say this. No matter where your thumb value is, it's been overrided by the fact that he's keeping whiskey bottles in a gun safe, because no gun safe is big enough to hold all your guns. So we already know that. So sorry, people. Pond is coming back.
I had to take one of the guns out and just leave it on the counter to get the whiskey in there.
Like, my gun safe sits behind where we're filming. And I even went bigger than I wanted to go. And I wish I would have gone one size up, because you cannot.
No.
For people that like firearms, I guess it's kind of like your whiskey collection. It keeps growing, and
yes. It
just cannot handle the allotment of firearms.
I've bought many bourbons thinking, hey, I'm going to trade this to get a bottle I really want.
Yeah.
Just like I've had firearms, I'm like, oh, I'm going to sell this or trade this in to get something I want
but
even
more. I really
more.
Shot that, and I really like that.
And then you realize, man, I bought this in a state auction, and I shot it one time, and now I'm attached to it. So let me just go buy the gun I want and keep this one.
Yeah. So it becomes like 2-for-1.
Yeah. Next thing you know, you're emailing Dick's Sporting Goods going, do y'all have anything bigger than the 64+4? I can't find it on your website.
I love that. When I bought my 300 Blackout, my wife just looked at me and goes, what the hell is that for? I said, well, I could lie to you and say it's for hunting, but it's really for killing people. In the big scheme of it all, it's really just, you know, you'll appreciate it if somebody comes up our long gravel driveway.
Yeah. One of my buddies in college, one of my roommates, he had a 300 Win Mag, which is, you know, for those who aren't familiar, it's one of the ones you take to like Alaska to bear hunt with.
Yeah.
And he had gotten in a spot where he needed some cash, and he came to me and said, do you want to buy this gun? And I said, what am I going to shoot with it in Virginia?
You know?
And he said, whatever
squirrel.
You want. Yeah. The round might be bigger than a squirrel. And so I bought it from him, and I took it. And one day I was going out deer hunting, and I hadn't seen anything for quite a while. And I was like, all right, I'm going to take 300 Win Mag out today. If I don't see anything, I'll just do a couple target practices. Sure enough, a deer comes through. I swear the hole it blew in, it was bigger than the circle you have around the fuel logo on Game Forge. It was almost like sticking a piece of paper up on a bulletin board. It just like stuck it to the tree behind it.
Oh, great. So all of you
and
that
if,
are...
this, if this is not a gun-friendly show, we can edit that out.
No, it's fine. I don't care. We're men. Men talk men stuff. If you're a big animal fan, sorry. But you shouldn't have been there. No. His instinctual properties should have told him to run. If he was truly in tune with nature. You know, I know it's all good. I think it's fascinating. And kind of, so John was an athlete here at Virginia, played football at Virginia. What? You can count that however you want to count that. I went to Virginia Tech, so there's a little rivalry there. I didn't play at Tech, so he's way above me. However, you know, kind of loyalties. But again, as an athlete, you know, as a football player, and now you're a golf junkie, kind of what are some similarities that you've taken from your years of playing football and being an athlete and understanding golf and how golf frustrates the hell out of you as an athlete?
You know, golf's interesting relative to almost any other sport. You know, to really get better, you spend a lot of time alone.
You do.
You spend a lot of time on the range by yourself with an AirPod in. You know, if you're a beginner and you're really trying to get better, a lot of folks, you're going to be scared to play with them. So you're going out and playing 5:30 rounds after work by yourself. And, you know, it's kind of unique in that. I know tennis has some similarities, but even there, they usually have a hitting partner, things like that. And to really kind of elevate your game wherever that level is, if you want to go from a 20 to a 10 or a scratch to a plus, I mean, you got to spend a lot of time by yourself and a lot of time in your own thoughts.
Yeah.
And
keep going.
We're good. Backup camera dead?
Yeah, we're good.
Hopefully this one makes it.
Yeah.
You know, you just have to spend a lot of time grinding, and you have to have a lot of internal motivation to reach whatever level you want in the game. And in football, it's totally different. I mean, it's 105 guys on my team.
Yeah.
You know, at any given time, and before fall camp, before we kind of weeded some guys out, there might be 110, 115 guys. And then, you know, at UVA, I think we had whatever the NCAA maximum was. We had 10 coaches plus equally that many interns all watching your every move from, you know, they would film every part of practice from the pre-practice stretch to the last play that you'd run, which is kind of a goof off, like, let's work on this trick play for the 50th time to run it once and lose 20 yards type of play at the end of practice. And someone was always watching your back. And if you didn't have the motivation to get better, someone was going to call you on your shit. Yeah. And I think with golf, it's the complete opposite. That's what I've kind of grown to love about the game is I can't blame the guy next to me for missing a block or for dropping an interception. Like, if I hit one in the woods, it's because I made a shitty swing.
Yeah.
And how am I going to kind of sit there and get better at that? The thing that I found about golf, though, that I loved was the outlet to compete.
Yeah.
Again, in any shape or form, whether that's with your buddies on a $5 Nassau or whether that's your club championship and you're kind of in the A flight. I mean, you know, it's stupid to say, but golf will humble you real quick.
No, it humbles you real quick.
And the thing that I've kind of found most interesting about that is how I've seen myself react to that.
Yeah.
And kind of the ups and downs and kind of not knowing what you're going to get when you show up to play. You know, with football, we had a pretty good idea. We drilled it for 6 days straight. And
you knew what the other team wanted to do.
If they got in a certain formation, we knew it was coming at us and we knew how to stop it. If you hit one behind a tree and you got to hit one left-handed, you've never practiced it, right? You just kind of show up and hit it.
And yeah, no, variability.
It bounces back at you. If you're playing by yourself, you just kind of drop one or act like it never happened. If you're playing in a tournament, next thing you know, you make nine and you're three shots out of it.
I think golf is pure variability. Mm-hmm. And that's the one thing I think a lot of golfers, and I think we as an industry, speaking for me as a coach, we do a very bad job to coach. Mm-hmm. We teach, there's some great mechanical teachers out there that can teach you the perfect motion at the perfect point and perfect, all this is what it needs to look like, but that's not golf. So the hard part is being able to apply that technique and go out there. So I think, to me, if you're a younger golfer, just starting, a newer golfer, like I'm fairly new to whiskey and I'm kind of a bull in a china shop, just knocking shit down, trying to figure stuff out. But I can go to a golf course anywhere in the world and be okay, right? But I've been in the sport for 30 years. But that concept of is you just got to go do it. You just got to go play, and you just got to go learn and go have fun inside of and embrace the fact, just like whiskeys, every shot's different, every taste is different, everything is different. Even barrel selections can change from barrel to barrel what it tastes like. And we've got to understand that variability in golf is we've got to embrace the fact that it's never the same. They change the pins, they change the tees, the wind changes, the weather changes, the grass height changes. This is all within 3-4 days. Mm-hmm. It's like, so it's always different. Like a basketball court is a basketball court. A football field is a football field. A baseball field is a baseball field. Yeah. They don't change. What changes, you know, the athletes moving inside of that. But again, the golf course is your competition and, mm-hmm. and being able to go attack that and understand it. And my son gotten into golf. Another COVID beauty is he wanted to do nothing with golf until the fact he was stuck in the house with me for 2 years. So he started to play golf and he's fallen in love with it. But the same thing is, all I've taught him is to embrace, you've got to learn to hit shots and go play golf. Mm-hmm. Forget P6 at P6.5, elbow needs to be, like, that is not the way to play golf. That's a way to teach a swing so you can look on, be on the driving range and look spectacular, mm-hmm. but that's not playing golf. And where I see a lot of players going wrong is they get so wrapped up in the technique piece, they forget that they have to go play golf. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, and I think whiskey's a lot like that. You get so crazed about the allotment and this, I gotta go find this, I'm gonna pay this for a bottle. There's a lot of really good whiskeys on the shelf. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of, I can go pay $600 and go play Pebble Beach, or I can pay $100 and go play a really good golf course in North Carolina. Mm-hmm. You know, so again, it's you don't have to spend the big bucks and do that. And what I love about golf, again, it just strips you down and you get to see who everybody is. You get to see the cheaters, you get to see the big-headed bravo guys that can't play but talk a game. You get to see the quiet assassin that sits in the corner, doesn't say a word. He's got clubs older than me, and he'll just stripe it and mm-hmm. beat the heck out of you. But again, I think golf shows you that, and I don't think a lot of sports can strip you down like golf can. Because, mm-hmm. again, you're out there by yourself. It's an individual sport. There's no hiding. You know, it's not like I'm a great hitter. I can't field worth a crap. Well, let's put you in right field. Like that doesn't exist in golf. So I think the humility that you learn from an athlete or from a person with golf is unlike any other sport.
Yeah, I mean, a couple things on that. One, I realized I spent a lot of time telling you how football and golf are completely different, not how they're the same, like you asked. But, you know, I think the one thing that I've noticed between the two that has not changed one bit, and, you know, I was a fairly high-level athlete in football. And at golf, I'm a 10 handicap or whatever. I'm going to shoot somewhere between 79 and 84 every time I play, pretty much. And what I've noticed is there's still that same burning desire to compete.
Yeah.
And to go out and get it and to go out and do what you do, think you can do and try to pull off something you've never done before.
Yeah.
And for me, you know, right after college, I was kind of a mess with my competitive outlet. I did beer league softball and then realized half my team got too drunk for my liking when taking it serious.
Beer league, not taking it serious.
I was the one. I showed up first day in baseball pants and slid into home.
I pulled over the catcher.
Yeah. Little did I know, the catcher didn't have any gear on, so a 300-pound person run at him and almost went in the dugout. I didn't have to slide. You know, I've showed up to the UVA Rec Center and tried to hoop it up with young kids, and then I saw some guy in his mid-40s tear his Achilles, realized I didn't want that. And with a lot of sports, there's a finite, there's an end to it, right? With football, that end comes at high school, college, or professional. You're not going to play this game forever.
No,
basketball is the same way. You know, any of these sports are the same way. Really, tennis and golf are the two. Bowling, if you want to call that sport.
Why not?
But the golf has no end. Yeah. And there's no, like, perfect score.
No.
You know?
I'm always learning. That's the best part.
Who was it? I think it was Rain Gibson or someone on the Corn Ferry Tour. He shot, like, 55 in a round or 56 or something crazy.
He wasn't happy with it.
And you know that he left a shot out there somewhere.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no end, and there's no end to how you can get better and how your game can change day to day, and that's what I find addicting to it. I show up and I have an idea of how I'm going to play, but sometimes I surprise myself good and bad.
Yeah, no.
But there's always somewhere in that round where I say I didn't do that perfect.
Always.
You know, in football we could have gone 13-0 and won the national championship and things would have been great.
Yeah.
You know, in golf you could win your club championship, be flight, and think, hey, damn it, if I'd have been a little bit better, I could have played in the A flight and
yeah,
won
no.
that.
No, I think the beauty of golf, it's always, it's tantalizing because the next step is not that far.
Yeah.
But it you know, inside of training, it's huge.
Yeah.
But, you know, as you're moving level to level, what changes and all, it's decimal points.
Yeah.
But it's achievable, and you hit that one shot, and it just draws you back. And I love to compete. I didn't really play much golf because I coached golf collegiately. You know, basically you were on the golf course all day and then you go home and you don't want to play golf. COVID came around again. My son started playing golf. I've played more golf in the last 3 years than I've probably played in the last 15 when I was coaching. And same thing, I love to go out there and compete and learn about myself more than anything. And it's just fun. And now that my son's getting dramatically better, John almost witnessed the first defeat. I'm like 72-0 against him right now with a couple ties now. And I squeaked out a tie because he missed an 8-foot birdie putt on the last hole and he didn't know he needed it to win. But I'll take that tie. But again, it's fun. And for me as a father, having my son enjoy the game that I love and him getting better at it. And I know he's getting ready to beat me. And I know I'm not. Once he beats me, you know, I'm going to clip him every once in a while, but the continuous streak is over. It'll become his continuous streak. It'll almost be like Virginia Tech football. Like Virginia will win on occasions where in the past it was like Virginia used to wax them. Now Virginia Tech's not nearly what they were under old Beamer ball, but that concept of...
We all remember the Wake Forest 0-0 or 3-3 or whatever it was where Beamer raised his arm. So we can take that off.
That's brutal. But the concept of just like me as a father and watching my son love the game that I love and him becoming better and better at it. And just it, to me, like John said, it's a sport you can play. I plan on playing until they tell me I'm basically 6 feet under and I can't play anymore. And again, I played with the boys the other day, and they're out hitting me. I'm getting old. But, you know, I'm a wily veteran. I can move it around and shape it and do things that I have to do. But, again, just the fact of competing, I think, is if you like competition, there's no better competitive game than golf.
Yeah, the thing I find fun about it is we went out and played the other day, you know, Brian's son's becoming a really good player quickly. I've played with y'all like, what, 4 or 5 months ago?
Yeah.
And I mean, he was not up to the level he is now. I've seen that improvement. It reminded me a lot of myself when COVID started, when I really got obsessed with it because there was nothing else to do. I was a 23 handicap.
Yeah.
I went down to a 9 in 6 months because I played and I worked at it. And now I'm hovering around a 10, 11. And, you know, I look at my gin app and I see that I've gotten worse on paper, but I'm also hitting shots now I could never hit then.
Yeah.
And so there's that kind of that freedom and improvement and finding things. But the other thing I love about it is, you know, when we went out and played, you know, your son was at that point in the round beating both of our asses.
Yes,
pretty
he
handily.
Was. He was doing a pretty good job of it.
This will be one of my favorite golf memories for as long as I live. He hits one on the 11th hole, which is a very reachable par 5. You have to thread the needle. And as soon as he made contact, he goes, "That was hammered." And Brian steps up. He had already hit, and he flew it past his dad. And I get up, and, you know, I got force equals mass times acceleration. I've got to beat
you
that.
You got to beat.
And I kind of leaned into one pretty good, and I didn't say a word to him. I kept driving past his ball, and I shot back to him. I said, "Gee, I'm 36 yards past you."
Yeah, I told him, I go, "That's like a Costco."
And so, you know, very much so. But, you know, he's beaten me the whole round, but on that one shot, like, I had my moment to talk shit, and I had my moment to be better than him. And that's the beauty of the game, is like a 20 handicap can come out and play against my wife, who's, you know, top player in the world. And on any given hole, they can make a birdie and she can make a bogey, and they can say, you know, "I try to go dunk a basketball on LeBron James and let me know how it's nuts."
See how that goes. See how that goes for you.
You know? But to kind of tie back to the overarching question that we were at like 20 minutes ago of similarities between golf and bourbon, I mean, you know, to use my wife for an example, she hit a shot one time and it was a high pressure situation. She had a lot on the line with this shot. And she took a club that was not the right club for that yardage, and, you know, she hit a 25-yard cut. And she just had a feeling, and she just had this idea that, like, I can hit this shot. And I asked her after the round, you know, it kind of changed the trajectory of her career. And I said, how'd you hit that shot? And she goes, I don't know. I just knew I could hit it. And I think that's a lot of the same with whiskey. You go into any master distillery, they're going to tell you the ideal temperature, the ideal floor, what they're trying to get out of each level of the rickhouse. But you go in there on a day when people aren't paying $50, come tour some shitty distillery, and they're going to tell you, hey, we're tasting it, we're moving barrels around, and we're just going off feel. It's like a good chef, right? They can't tell you what the ingredients are and something they whip up, but it just turns out perfect. And I think we all have some of that in us, especially amateur players. We don't know how we hit some of the shots we hit, good or bad.
Yeah.
But we just hit them. And that's the same with whiskey. I mean, you know, this year's version of our Heaven Hill is going to be a little bit different from next year's.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's all human feel, human element, and kind of not being afraid to take risks.
Yeah, and environment, right? The environment changes. Yeah. The rickhouse, the weather, all that, the environment on the golf course changes. Yeah. Like my son played today, and it was rainy, and he, you know, didn't play as well. Well, it's rain. How often have you played in rain? Not very often, right? So what do we need to start training? Well, when it's raining, we've got to come up with protocols and prepare for that. So I think, again, to me, when I was sitting there one night, actually drinking a dram, actually going through data reports on players, I'm like, God, these two are freaking similar. Yep. Hence, the speakeasy came into existence.
Go to the old course on a day when there's no wind and no rain, and you might shoot the lowest round you've ever shot.
Yeah.
Go there one day when it's blowing 30 and raining sideways, you'll probably shoot the highest round you've ever shot.
Never shot any worse than you could have. Yeah, you had wind. Whew. That changes everything. All right, let's do one more of your samples, and we'll do some rare breed.
I'm not going to tell you which ones they are, but pick number two or number three.
Three, because three is such a great number in golf.
Two's better.
Yeah, but threes are if you shoot nothing but threes, you'd be really happy.
Drinking one first was like having a hole-in-one in a practice round.
Yeah, well, I think you set us up. I think you totally set us up. But again, I think the fun part is I don't care.
I gave you more.
That doesn't matter.
I got to drive home.
Yeah, that's true. What I like about it, again...
And I have this bottle in my house.
Yeah, that's fair enough, too. He's got the double. Definitely sweet again. It's got to be bourbon of some sort.
I'll spoil it here. There's no rye in this
collection. This is
the Nulu had more rye in it than
I'm getting most. lots of sugar and caramel, and it's good. Higher proof. Yes. It's up there. It's well over 100.
It is.
Is it a weeded?
It is.
Damn, yes. I didn't know anything. Now, I can't tell you the manufacturer, but I'm getting the sweet wheat. I'm getting the sugar, the bourbon-y corn on the front end, and I'm getting kind of that the wheat whiskey. And this is bourbon. Wheats are the part that I'm working really hard to appreciate because I find these to be just too sweet for me. Mm. It's good, but it's very sweet to me.
Interesting. Okay.
It does give you, it's smooth, get a little burn, a little spice.
Give me a proof guess.
Proof? Probably. It's more than 100. I think it's pretty close to what we had earlier. Probably 115-ish.
125. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, take a look at the color here.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you seeing kind of age on this?
Oh, I'm thinking probably it's kind of a amberish, so probably 8-ish.
Pretty close. It's and I'll explain this in a minute. This is the one that I went and picked with my bourbon club. Ton of guys that are super into bourbon, older bourbon heads.
Yeah.
When we, which will explain some of the spice and the higher proof, but 1792 full proof,
1792.
Proofs everything down to 125 out of their full proof lineup. Even the ones you go and buy yourself at the distillery, if you go and buy a whole barrel, they're going to proof it down for you before they send you the bottles. So this one we went and picked, it was about 9 years and 9 months when we picked it, and we picked this at 139 proof. So some of that sweetness that's come back is a factor of the water.
Yeah.
Some of the reason the color doesn't quite line up to a 9.5.
Because of the water.
9 3/4 year bourbon is a little bit of that water. I will say they did a good job proofing it down. It's still one of my favorites in my collection. I've got most of all of them.
Yeah.
At this point, all the ones you've heard of or thinking about. But I'll tell you, when we found this at 139, I would have paid double for the barrel if they wouldn't touch it. It was so good.
I bet.
It was absolutely unbelievable. And we had a second backup barrel. We got very lucky with the ones they pulled for us because it was COVID and people weren't coming. We had two barrels we wanted to buy, and we got stuck by Virginia ABC law.
Did you?
We could not buy two. And maybe the best whiskey I've ever had was we took this barrel and the other barrel we wanted, and we blended them together.
Nice.
And it was absolutely unbelievable. But this one's going to give you something totally different from what you're going to go buy off the shelf of 1792. You're going to get a more unique flavor profile. This one skews a little bit sweeter, which I was a little bit disappointed in when we got the bottle, but when we first picked that thing at 139, I mean, the spice on there was just absolutely unbelievable. And it sat with us for a significant amount of time.
It's good. The finish is there. Get a little burn coming down. A little bit of dry mouth, but not crazy. Mm-hmm. Finish is long.
Water's going to help that a little bit.
Yeah.
If you just look at the glass once you're done, the legs that are still sitting on there, I mean, it's...
You can tell. It's higher proof. Yeah. It's good. I enjoyed this one. Again, I'm not the biggest wheat bourbon guy. That's my wife. But as a wheat goes, it's pretty good. Not my favorite, though. I would say number one. Blew it out of the water. But I like that rye bite. So that was kind of skewed, I guess.
It's your show. You can call out my pick if you want.
No, it's good. It's good. No, if somebody, I was at a bar and somebody handed that to me, I would not turn it down or I would not spit it out or throw it in a spit bucket. It's very good. I appreciate that, actually.
But if Brian has me back, the next iteration of this will be Jim Beam, Jack Daniels, and whatever else it is.
Rebel Yell. Or sorry, Rebel Now. They dropped the Yell.
Something plastic. If you can drop it from 10 feet and the bottle won't break, that's what Brian's going to have.
We're going college brands. We're going well only. But no, I think it's a very good whiskey. But for me, it's just a little sweet.
For sure.
I appreciate it. It's cool.
you're free to criticize. Like you said, everyone's got different tastes. Everyone's
no
got
criticization
different
there. It's a different flavor profile. But all right, let's do a little. I actually bought this on recommendation from John Pond, and I actually gave this to the boys. If you ever watched our first episodes where we kind of went around the world on whiskeys, and this was the American bourbon I gave them. So we went from an Irish that was pretty tame.
Super.
Yeah, to Glenfiddich, which is a good, solid, smooth scotch. And then I gave the boys that were not whiskey drinkers Wild Turkey, and their hair caught on fire, and they're like, but they learned to appreciate it. So we always know that Wild Turkey is always going to come in right around 100. That's what they do.
Rare breed's their one barrel proof.
Is it?
116.6.
116, nice. But again, going through college, Wild Turkey 101 was the drink of choice, but I didn't appreciate bourbons back then, so 101 was burn, baby, burn, and okay, I'll do another one.
Yep.
But now I've actually gone back and retasted 101. It's a good bourbon. You sit down and just enjoy it.
101, it kind of holds that weird place in the bourbon world right now. Yeah, you'll see a lot of guys in their 50s, 60s, 70s that can't let go of the old music that they thought was so good back. It's the same with bourbon guys in Wild Turkey 101. The old heads in the bourbon game will swear by Wild Turkey 101.
It's good.
And it's good. Perfectly good to me, but it ain't it.
No, no.
And they're treating it like it's AC/DC.
No. It'd be more like Barry Manilow. It's good.
Yep.
He had some good tunes. No, but
Rare Breed does a really good job with this particular one, kind of getting that proof up there.
Yep.
For folks who see this, if you look beside it and the one with the green labels on there, they're Rare Breed Rye. It's going to come in at the same proof, but God, the Rare Breed Rye has a little bit of something over the Rare Breed. It's just, for 45, 55, whatever this bottle is, it's sitting on your shelf. A Rare Breed Rye is going to punch well above its weight. So is this. You're going to give this to a bunch of buddies who don't really know bourbon, but they know the names Weller and Buffalo Trace and E.H. Taylor, and they're going to think it's right on par with it. But this one you can actually go in a store and get.
And you're going to find this one. Here's the beauty of if you have a state-controlled alcohol problem. Going and finding the bottles is, you know, I'm not an allotment nerd like this guy, so if I stumble on an allotment, I'm cool.
Yep.
If I don't stumble on it, I will just go to the shelf and go, Wild Turkey, why not? 101, woo, AC/DC. That's funny, though. I can see that. They're like Pittsburgh Steelers fans.
Yeah, 100%. Yankees fans. Yeah. They're like Yankees fans.
Or Dallas Cowboy fans, still talking about the 90s. We peaked in 96 or whatever. It's been... Now, granted, I can't even say Redskins anymore. I'm a Washington fan. Thank God Dan Snyder's gone.
That was Super Bowl.
Yeah, that is our Super Bowl.
That was the Super Bowl.
So hopefully we'll see a resurrection coming in the years to come.
How was it? So Lauren was playing at KPMG up at Baltusrol, and it was like a Tuesday night or something. We were looking to kill some time.
Yeah.
We went to the Somerset Patriots game, which is, I think, this double-A affiliate of the Yankees, whatever they are.
Yeah.
And they were playing some team, who knows. But I'm a big minor league baseball fan guy. And this person was sitting in front of me, and he had the shirt on that had all the Yankees championship rings. And then it had on the other side the much smaller column of Red Sox championship rings. And I could not help myself after a couple beers. I tapped him on the shoulder, and I said, which ring came last, the Red Sox or the Yankees? And he just looks at me and goes, the Red Sox.
Yeah,
well, I was like, okay, all right, take shirt off.
I'm looking at averages. I'm playing the average game.
We won 20 of those rings in the 40s.
Yeah. Babe Ruth, let me tell you about him.
My great-grandfather saw him play once, said he was incredible.
Yeah.
Ate a hot dog and then trotted the bases.
Had a lively right arm, too. He was the original, what's the guy now from the Angels, the Japanese guy?
Shohei Ohtani.
Yeah, he was the original. I think...
Shohei lifts weights, though.
Yeah, that's true. I think Babe drank a lot of these.
If there would have been
So who's the better athlete? A guy that's well-tuned or a guy that drank a couple and went out then threw a no-hitter and hit three bombs? I don't know. You judge. Very good. Man, we're going to have to pick up the pace here. We're pushing an hour. But again, to me, the beauty of Wild Turkey, you get that... Get the sweetness out the gate, get a little spice, a little pepper in the middle, mm-hmm. and it kind of just fades. You shouldn't get the burn unless you chug it. Like if you let it sit in your mouth for a second and let your own, as you enjoy it, don't chug it. You don't get the burn. But again, to me, Wild Breed is, I sit down and enjoy this. This is actually my second bottle. The first bottle I bought when he suggested about 6 months ago. So this is probably the number one I sit down and just enjoy for an evening.
I think it's important for folks, it all goes back to golf, but it's a lot like golf, like be patient with your whiskey. If you're trying something for the first time, take a minute, you know, let it roll around the tongue, just kind of take really small sips, start out, get acclimated to the proof, and really just, you know, we're well past our college ages now. We're not beer bong and natty lights out of a funnel anymore.
That's right.
take your time, drink the whiskey, enjoy the whiskey.
Yeah.
And if there's something you're not getting, come back to it later.
Yeah.
You'll hear a lot of people talk about a neck pour.
Yeah.
And how that's the worst pour in whiskey. I tend to agree. It's still good, but once you get a little bit out of that bottle, I guarantee you if we come back and do this episode 6 months later and that Heaven Hill's still sitting there, that bottle's going to taste different.
Of course.
Oxygen does its work. Science
does its
work.
Your palate's going to change.
For sure.
What'd you eat for lunch today?
Mm-hmm.
I ate a big, greasy garlic burger. and then now everything tastes like, I don't know what it tastes like. So I think, again, and that's the beauty of it. And golf the same way. It just changes.
Yeah.
Some days I'm piping a small little draw, buttery fade the next day. What changed? Nothing. Everything I've done was exactly the same, but all of a sudden, my ball flight went a little of this to a little of this.
And if you're ever really struggling to pick something out of whiskey, just ask your wife. They have more taste buds. They have better noses than us. My wife does not drink a lot of whiskey, but damn, she can pull the notes out of bourbon almost off the sheet.
My wife's so good at it. I'm like, it's sweet, it's whatever. And she's like, I'm smelling the rare African orchid of...
We had a bourbon tasting during COVID, and Lauren happened to be in town. She came with me, and you know, it's a bunch of guys that think they know everything about bourbon. We're having this tasting and kind of going around the table. What do you taste here? What are you feeling here? And someone's like, Lauren, would you like to participate? And she goes, yeah. And she reads it off. And one guy just kind of stops and looks at her and goes, did you like read anything before you came here about what we were having?
Yeah.
She was like, no. It was almost word for word from the master distiller's notes. I mean, she fucking nailed it.
And, well, women smell better
yep.
and taste better. Men see action better. So I think this goes back to, you know, survival, right? Men see movement better. And there's tons of studies on this. As a golf coach, I've researched this a lot. So men see movement very well. Women see it less. Women smell and taste better. And my wife can tell you right now, she'll be like, can you smell that? And I'll be like, do you smell the burning, like a burning smell coming from that outlet? No. But they can. Again, I hate to say it, but people say there's no difference in men and women, but I'm going to tell you right now, there is.
Get you a clean one.
Yeah, this will be fine. Men and women, there's no difference. Yes, there is. They smell so much better and taste better. And when I do a tasting with her, I just defer to her. I'm like, it's kind of sweet, a little complex, and she'll rip it apart. So I love taking my wife to tastings because she makes me sound smart because she does it all for me.
Yep, as it should be.
You got, right? You marry for a compliment. You know, you don't want to marry yourself. You want a compliment to you. So again,
exactly.
Yeah, that's the beauty of it. You're marrying your compliment. Where I'm weak, she's strong. Where she's weak, I'm strong. So again, what does that mean? So I'm really good at buying and drinking bourbon. I'm really good at shooting guns. She doesn't do either one of those. Compliments.
If I saw my wife doing smelling salts and running into 300-pound men for fun, I'd think we were in a simulation that was broken.
Yeah, that's right. Fair enough. All right, so we have taste number three here.
Yes.
All right. My nose is dying on me here. Again, I'm getting sweet. Another bourbon, I would surmise. Lighter than 1792. So if you look there, we're definitely younger, or it's cut with more water. Either way.
I brought this one for a reason.
That's interesting.
It is.
I'm getting peppery. I'm getting alcohol burn. Mm-hmm. But it's not Jefferson height. So I'm getting burn, but I don't think it's as... It's higher proof, but I don't know if it's 125. Long finish. It's still on my tongue. It's still sitting on my tongue.
Yep.
I'm going to go to bed tonight. I'm going to wake up tomorrow morning. It's still going to be, and I'm going to brush my teeth. It's still going to be on my tongue. That's good whiskey. I like this one.
I want to get the proof exact on this, so I'm going to pull up the picture I took of the bottle before I came over here.
Very smooth. Not the most complex. I'm not getting hit with tons and tons of flavors, but I'm getting sweet. I'm getting some pepper. Good.
So 90 proof.
90. I could tell it was less.
Yeah.
But it does have a little dry bite.
So this one was an interesting one, and I brought this. We might talk about this one longer than any other bourbon we've had tonight, which is probably not good for our time frame here. Considering we got to cut it short.
We got to go eat dinner.
Isn't the Hall of Fame game tonight? We need to go watch football.
Yes, it is. The Browns and the Jets, right?
Yeah.
Aaron Rodgers.
That's right.
Jet debut.
Is he playing tonight?
I doubt it. Maybe two plays.
Yeah. he's doing ayahuasca in the locker room.
He's freaking drunk, eating mushrooms in the corner.
So this bottle came to me in a very kind of funky way. I was on that same bachelor party where I got this Nulu. We went to this bar, and if you're ever in Louisville, I recommend you go to it. It's called Neat. They basically specialize in whiskeys from the 60s, 70s, 80s, and 90s.
Okay.
And so they're basically, they're dust collectors. They're going to find out.
Is this the old Evan Williams?
It is.
This is my college years. I appreciate that.
So they're gonna kind of specialize in going out and finding those old bottles in people's basements and that their granddad never got to. They're going to preserve them, and when they open them, they're going to seal them right, because they know they're not going to sell a ton of them. But this one, I went to a bar, and it was late in the night, and I was somehow sober enough to be budget conscious, so I kind of found one of the cheapest pours they had on the menu. And I happened on this. It's a 1998 Evan Williams Sour Mash 8-year-old whiskey. It's going to come in at 90 proof. And what struck me is I was clear thinking enough at this point in the evening to just realize, they charge $10 for 2 ounces at this bar.
Yeah.
I could not fathom how much better this was than any shitty Evan Williams you're going to go buy right now. And this was right in the height of when bourbon was not popular, and they weren't selling a lot of whiskey. Yeah. And to see what was probably then, I don't know, $8, $10, $12 bottle. Probably. To see that they took 8 years to make it, to age it, is incredible. And just kind of the level of what you get out of an 8-year Evan Williams regular ass product.
Yeah.
Blew me away.
Yeah.
And it was kind of my first experience with not a true dusty, not something from the 70s, 80s, but kind of that late to mid 90s. And it has a ton in it. And, this was a bottom shelf bourbon back then too.
Yeah.
And you go today and you get one and you can barely drink it, and you've already put 12 ounces of Diet Coke in it.
Yeah,
you're trying to figure out what's going on. And so I asked the bartender, I said, how much for the rest of the bottle? And they came up with a price I liked, and I brought it home, and this was the last pour I have out of that bottle. But
brings back my college days.
That's how old I am.
I'm at the 50.
It kind of goes to show, you have to be careful in bourbon, because as this has taken off and people are going nuts over bourbon, Elijah Craig Barrel Proof is a perfect example. That used to be 12-year age-stated great bourbon. Yep. And now that people are going nuts for it and it's flying off shelves, they've taken off the age statement. And the same thing's happening with a ton of bourbons across the industry. I think that's where you can find some value in these companies that are upholding the standards. And some of these smaller distilleries, once they get past the growth phase, that they can actually wait and mature some of this to a point. I mean, again, shitty 8-year Evan Williams bourbon. In my personal opinion, I'd put this up with anything we've had.
Yeah, it's good.
When you factor in what it costs.
No. For an $8, literally, it would have been an $8 bottle of whiskey back in the day.
Here are the brands that we enjoyed throughout this podcast. Nulu, 1792, Heaven Hill, Evan Williams, Wild Turkey Rare Breed, and J.H. Bard's Toasted Rye. This has been a Fuel production.